Oh man, you kidding me? That whole Soul Quarians thing. That
period.
That was one of the best periods of music for me in my life.
Totally.
You know,
they didn't put out enough.
They needed like an EP or something.
Oh,
like,
you kidding me? If there was a Soul Quarians tour,
there was?
No, they
no if there was, if oh they had
God.
Been.
Oh my God.
It, no, the closest to it was the Smoke and Grooves tour that mm-hmm. where they had with OK Player and
we went to that.
A bunch of my homies told me about it. They had like a Slum Village, Jazzy Fat Nasties, I guess Mos Def and Top Lib. Yeah. Did the Roots perform too? I think the Roots yeah. Roots
closed it maybe.
Man, come on, man.
Yeah, a Soul Quarians tour would be, I'd be like one of those people that, like, we're going to follow you from city to city.
Yo, there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
That's the jam. He'll be like, oh shit, 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 that's the jam.
All right, we starting now?
That's the jam. Yeah,
oh, okay, because I have to do the standard introduction, I guess. Once again, you are tuned in to The Jam. This is your host, Merc80, with my other hosts here, Mr. and Mrs. Layman, Kim and Chris. Say what up.
What up?
What's going on, y'all?
Today, we do not have a guest. What we are going to discuss today is who I consider one of the greatest musicians to have walked the earth. Guy that you may have heard of by the name of J Dilla, also known as JD.
Yes.
Dilla Dog. Usually we do the formalities of, you know, discussing what a jam is, like by our own definitions, but you should hear episode 1 and 2 so you can get into that. We have a lot to talk about today, so I just want to get straight into it. Let's first go around, maybe talk about first experience hearing a Dilla track. Maybe you didn't know that it was Dilla or JD or whatever, but like, do you remember at least the first recognition of like, oh, that's who did that? Okay.
I know the first time I heard a track that was attributed to Dilla. I was in Windsor Hills going past like the school up there, and it was one of our radio stations doing like a Pump It or Dump It. And Players was the track. And I forget what the other track was that went against Players. But I know I literally like pulled over like, what is this?
Yeah.
And like turned it up. And, you know, they started rapping. Slum Village started rapping. But I was like, this track is driving me bananas. And like, I wouldn't normally call into the radio station. But I was like, yeah, this one I'm calling in. It's this Players joint. I need to hear this on regular rotation. And then after that, it was one of those songs that made me hungry to find out more about the artists. So I got into Slum Village and then JD himself, and then started to realize he was behind so much music that I had listened to, you know, from the Uma to, I mean, just countless others. But Players was the one for me, and Players remains. I mean, if I hear that song now, it stops everything. And when I found out the sample, because Benji B out of the UK, Deviation, Benji B used to, right after Dilla passed, he would do these shows where he would play Dilla tracks and the samples that Dilla used for the track. And when he played that damn Players sample, I was like, what the hell? Like, how do you even hear this to turn it into what you turned it into? First of all, how do you even get this album? How do you even get this little white acapella group and their album? Where did you find this? And then how did you listen to it and hear them say Claire?
Yeah.
And turn Claire into Players?
Yep.
Amazing.
That's funny. Players was that beat for me, although being a Tribe Head that I was, and I, you know, kind of looked up a little thing after they came out to Beast Rhymes of Life, like, okay, all right, who's this JD guy? I hear the sound of the Tribe. It's kind of changing a little bit. And it didn't hit me on even when the Lab Cap in California by Farside dropped that he did them joints. But it was to me that when I first heard Players 2, and I was like, the hell is this?
Yep.
This shit not. And then you like, okay, Slum Village, and you like, okay, this Dilla, and you're like, why do I know that name? And you start just digging through other stuff. You're like, damn, okay, like, this dude just has hits, man. Like, this dude is just very underrated. One of the guys, you're like, oh, how is he not producing more shit?
You know, let me make this very clear. There's a lot of people who have their feelings and issues with people who are saying that they're Dilla heads and whatever. And, you know, there seems to almost be this kind of, you know, especially among underground hip hop heads, there's this barrier of entry to whether or not you know real hip hop or you know Dilla, you know this. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to question my loyalty and how far back I go, I'm going to let you know right now. Very distinct memory between, it was like the summer just starting right before ninth grade, right between eighth, ninth grade. I'm in the car with my mom, and I was just leaving a friend's little party get together thing, and I was just kind of in a funk or in a mood or whatever. And this is when I had gotten about a year in rhyming with the group that I was in at that time. This is around like 94, 95. Being in the group at that time, especially the homie Surge, what up, Surge? He had the ASR-10, and we were buying records and all that stuff. And this was the point of especially listening to like Wu-Tang and Premier and all those other dudes, really that feeling of finding that perfect sample or making that perfect beat, that classic beat, and recognizing when somebody had done that. You know, RZA was like on a roll at that point. Like Cuban Links had come out probably around then, stuff like that. Like we were just immersed in all of these great sounds. So I'm in the car with my mom and I'm laid back in the car and they play this song on the radio and it was the most beautiful thing I had ever heard. Can't keep running away. And I was like, okay, I'm just laying in the car. But then as the beat kept going and that guitar and all that stuff, I raised the seat up in the car and I turned it up. I was like, who is this? The Far Side hadn't released anything in a while. The last thing that they might have released was like around 93. So I was trying to figure out who was rhyming. I was like, this sounds like the Far Side. I think it is. And just the more that the beat kept going. And so then I remember like not too long after that, like I was asking everybody if they heard the song, because radio back then was kind of bad, but it's not as bad as it is now, because you might hear a song once on the radio now and never hear it again. Yeah. And so then you'd have to, at that point, you'd have to wait for that song to come on. Right. You'd be like, I hope they play it because I don't know who it is. I need to figure out who it was. And so I was asking everybody who it was, and then finally it came out that it was the Far Side, and then that's when the name JD started coming around. That's when, you know, it started pushing into the Beach Rhymes and Life thing with the Uma and stuff, and I remember at around that time, Beach Rhymes and Life, people, there was a lot of debates about it because they didn't feel like the sound was quite the same, but I loved all the beats. I thought that the rhymes were... And the addition of Consequence, there was a lot of change that you could kind of feel happening in that album.
Right.
But a lot of those beats are undeniable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And but, you know, that running, that was the beat of the year. And as you can clearly hear between Kim, Chris, and me, the number one way that you know that it's a Dilla beat and that I started recognizing that it was a Dilla beat is when I said, what the fuck is this? Every single time. Every single time. Who do you know right now making a beat where you like, what the fuck is that? You know what I mean? The fuck is that? When I heard, and I didn't even know it was a Dilla, because this is another thing. Dilla has so many styles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He had styles upon styles. When I heard Stakes is High, you know, because I was going through a kind of a depressing period within myself, like around sophomore year of high school. And when I heard that song, the first time I heard it was I heard them perform it on BET. No. And I was like, yo, this is hot. And then when I heard the actual song, I was like, yo, this is amazing.
Yeah, that song is
you know? No, every single time without fail. I'll probably go into other stories of what the fuck moments of beats that he's made. But like, when you talk about jams, like, okay, we're going to go into, this is kind of an interesting area because Dilla made stuff that were joints and he had the jams. And I think that the thing is that as we've kind of defined a jam as being more recognized among a bigger populace of people, I think that his jam catalog in terms of what you can throw on at a party that everybody will know probably a little bit minimal. Yeah. You were kind of, that was still the underground, you like hip hop head. You have De La, Common, Busta Rhymes. He was about the Busta Rhymes and A Tribe Called Quest were the more prevailing figures at the time. Right. But I know, like, you got a list of the discography, and I think it was once he passed that people started really digging into his discography to know the stuff that he produced. He made some jams that y'all don't realize, like, he made jams. And some of y'all think that he was just incredibly slept on. But the thing is that it wasn't until maybe a little bit later in the 90s that people started actually paying attention to producers. And Dilla seemed like the kind of guy that didn't really want the spotlight all on him anyway.
Right.
And I can kind of understand that, because I think that he wanted to stay in that creative space. And the longer that spotlight is on you, it's very easy to get lost in, you know, the opinions of people. This is coming at a point where everybody's like, yo, you need a Timberland beat. You need a this beat. You need a that beat. You need this beat on there in order for it to be hot. After a while, to me, that kind of discussion really waters down the effect of the artist. It really waters down the effect of when you just start really just kind of compartmentalizing it and saying that you need this producer and you need a beat from this person and you need your beat to kind of sound like this and have that. Dilla didn't follow that format. Mm-mm. And I think that there is a point of where when that spotlight comes on you, you have to now, quote unquote, brand yourself to sound a certain way. And Dilla didn't have one.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there were beats that I heard where it didn't sound anything like anything before, but the only way that I would probably know is because I said, what the fuck is this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That
he
was
made
it.
The kind of beats where you wanted to dig deeper and find out what was behind the track. Like, you're dying to find the sample. You're dying to break. Like, I had one of those moments listening to Steve Spacek, that song Eve.
Oh, psh.
That's another one. Like, I can listen to that beat forever. Really? And like, Dilla opens the track, but when it comes in, and Spacek has such a unique voice that he definitely needs the right music behind him to amplify it. And like, it was so, that combination of his voice and Dilla's voice and that beat and that whole breakdown, I want you, I need you. Like, it's just, it's just the perfect marriage, you know, you want to just unpeel all the layers of it. Like, when I listen to Dilla tracks, and that's what I loved about that Beatmaker series. Chris, what's the name of that Beatmaker series? Everybody, Pete Rock had one.
Mm-hmm. That was like, yeah, it was the Beat Dimension.
Beat Society.
Beat Generation.
Yeah.
I loved just having an instrumental album of Dilla's that was just so very raw, is not the right word, but naked. You know what I mean? Like, just the music, just the instrumentation, just hearing how he's layering stuff one on top of the other. Like, you could hear it in that project. And then after that, he gave us so many more instrumentals. And then luckily for us, he put out a lot of his tracks as instrumental. I mean, you can find whole albums of instrumentals, you know, with, and they're wonderful.
Yeah, and you had a lot of guys who were big fans of his, who were big music heads back then, who would get them Dilla tapes. You know, I've heard, you know, with J-Rock and Benjamin, other guys who are like, yeah, I would just get these tapes. And you're like, what the hell? And then just hearing people describe actually seeing him put the beat together, that nobody's like, everybody's like, how did, what?
What were you thinking?
How did you,
what were you thinking?
Right.
I know that besides the Roots, he was the first person that a lot of people really focused on saying having some kind of live instrumentation. Mm-hmm. The fact that the drum beats and the snares weren't always on, the bass line would, you know, fall in kind of a weird pocket, which is what gave it that funk.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's when all of a sudden people started becoming like, oh yeah, I can't be quantizing my beats. I can't be doing this. Like,
you want it to be a little off.
Man, people been biting Dilla since the beginning. People started biting him a whole lot more after he passed, but people been biting Dilla since the beginning, even if it was just the idea of, you know, oh, let me put a live bass in here, or let me actually play the drum track or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Let's go back over to the discography real quick. What are some of the things you've highlighted in there?
Well, I was saying this because I was thinking about his timeline and when people started getting on to him. When he dropped that that Welcome to Detroit, which was like that first one of the series, that seemed to be his, like, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
You know, he's been, you know, kind of featured and not really, you know, just the person who made the production and all that. But this was his first, like, oh, shit, JD putting out a product. Mm-hmm. Let me go here. Mm-hmm. And you were like, mm-hmm. oh, snap. Mm-hmm. Then you had the Soulquarian period where he did the comments like Water for Chocolate, which is Common's best album to me. And mm-hmm. Voodoo and the Erykah Badu, Mama's Gun, just hitting like that. And to me, I think once he did the J-Lib album and finding somebody, he's basically his peer, creative peer, and Madlib, guys who just like making beats and like, I don't really care if, you know, whatever. I'm making music and that's what it's about. And I don't care about all of the fluff and all that crap. Was like, everybody was like, oh, we on him now. Now he's known.
Those collaborations were ridiculous. But back to that Welcome to Detroit, it makes that very, the way that album opens, that first track, mm-hmm. you feel like you're in an old smoky lounge somewhere. You know what I'm saying? And that synth comes in, and then he gets that breakdown, and he does that beat that is one of our actual jams, one of our appointed jams, that Looking at the Front Door, that you know, he does that beat. Like, I don't know. Dilla's music was, to me, it transported you to a place. And every track would take you somewhere different. You know what I mean? So, like, that beat, that particular album, what did you mention? Like Water for Chocolate. Hands down, to me, that's Common's best album. Like, mm-hmm. and it's really that the musical foundation of it is what makes it oh so great.
Yo, freshman year college, Napster. Right? Napster, first of all. I'm going to say that. Napster.
Right.
The homies, this is when albums started leaking online. Mm-hmm. The homie got like Water for Chocolate. So all of us gathered up in the dorm room to play it. That first song, Time Traveling.
Yes.
I'm just sitting there. I'm just staring at the ceiling like, oh, my God, yes. There's these moments of music, especially with hip hop music at that time, that I think that it was becoming even more and more educated within itself and its place in other music. And Time Traveling was that moment. Besides Running, that song was like, oh my God, he did it. You know, it was a triumph. Like, oh yes, it's the next level. We got there. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you something. The very next song, Heat. Listen, I remember, and I didn't even tell my friends this till way later, but I remember distinctly thinking, I said, it's physically impossible to get funkier than this. Okay? Because the bass line, the way that it moves, the way that it fits in that pocket, like, as an actual presence, I said to myself, it's physically impossible to get funkier than this. And of course he proved me wrong. Of course he proved me wrong, time and time and again. But I thought that the limit of funk had been reached, and he disproved it.
And go ahead.
No, I'm gonna say, just looking at that, I mean, you know, him being on all the Busta stuff from Jump. Oh. And the funny thing is, once I started, you know, getting hip to him, and he was always bigging JD up, and beyond the albums, I was at a point like, why the hell don't you get a full album with this dude? If this dude is your boy, and you saying this guy is like one of the best to do it, and the fact that she's on like two songs.
Because this is the politics. This is when, to me, where hip hop started getting into the politics, is when hip hop started finally, especially around, I'd say, 95, 96. Up to the 2000s, where cats were like, oh, I need a Timberland beat. I need the Neptune started getting high. I need that. I need who else was cracking around then? I don't even know.
You know,
like,
what's funny? Just, I remember when guys were saying that, like, with the Primo beat, because you wanted to spit.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, I need this beat.
I need that
because
Primo, yes.
I want to go nuts.
Right.
And then either Timberland, it was like, I need something that's going to sell.
Yeah.
So I need a
Timberland. And it would be hot, but right. it was a mark of, this is what it can get played in the club.
Right.
Or it can get played at the party, and that's fine. But there were Dilla tracks that you could play at the party also, mm-hmm. but then it's just this matter of, well, they don't know that song. Whoever it was rhyming on it, like, De La was not as big then. They've still kind of been kind of at the same level, but it was just this annoying thing to me that's still prevailing of it needs to sound like this.
Yeah. Right. That's what people tell you when you make music, they want you to emulate a sound that's already popular.
Right.
Because trying to do something unique, there's no guarantee of that making any money. And so much of the industry is dealing with the corporate aspect of it,
right,
that the artistic creativity is completely stifled. But like, can we go back to like Water for Chocolate? I have to pull up the track listing.
Yeah.
Chris, this is so like, this song was such a great part of our relationship foundation. I feel like this was like some of our early dating years.
Yes.
Because what year did this album come out?
They have it on
99, 2000.
Okay, and we started dating officially in
99.
And I remember the first time Chris took me out of town on a trip, he was taking me to his vacation home. I was like, I'm dating a man with pedigree.
He got money.
And we knocked Ciampa off of that album.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I was like, I'm in love. I'm in the car with a man who I am dating, and we're going to his vacation spot, and the music is off the chain. And that song came on, and I was just like, you got Dilla singing the hook, Common rapping, and Common to me is, he's one of the more flawless MCs. Mm-hmm. Like, the combination of it was just beautiful. And then that tricks right into Thelonious.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like a party. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For that, like, 5-6 minutes that those two tracks are on. Like,
yeah, like, that non-chomp. I mean, that's one. That is one of them, like, really? Like, can't nobody
it's
else
perfect.
Make this beat? And it's not real, like, because he had a joint that just straight in the trunk, vibrate your, break your speakers. But that was like, this is so mellow, but still got a little like, you can groove to this.
Yes.
Listen, I want to say good job, Chris. Very good job, sir. Any of y'all dudes out there listening, if you want to know how to find your future wife, put some Dilla on. If she don't like it, kick her out the car.
Right.
that's definitely my litmus test. Oh, you don't like Dilla? Oh, bye.
We have nothing.
There's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing for us to talk about. If you don't like Dilla, then
we probably
don't
really like this song. Like,
what?
Okay.
Yeah.
Took me to check my watch.
Check please. Nog Chomp. Everything on there. I mean, because you can tell when he was on the track.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell when he did something on it. Jesus. Oh, and when Questlove told the story of how he did Doing It, you know, the story of Doing It off that album?
I feel like I've heard it.
So the story goes, I guess they were either they were, I'm pretty sure they were snowed in over at Dilla's house over in Detroit or whatever. So they were going to have like a beat making battle. You know, they were going to pick quote unquote useless records, random records that you can't, there's no real breakbeat, no obvious sample in it. I guess, I forget which one Quest got, but then I guess he specifically chose one for Dilla. He chose a Rick James record.
Yeah, Give It to Me, Baby.
Yeah. And so he gave him that one because it's one of those extremely well-known songs. But I guess to the average producer, you're going to say to yourself, there's nothing really here to mess with. So I guess he started, you know, he just went to it and made that Doing It beat. And I didn't realize this is all the story after he passed away. But then when I listened to that bass line, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, he did that. And then he added that magical piano on there. I was like, man, this is just, you know, it's just obnoxious how fucking dope this dude is. And then after he passed away, all the beat tapes that I got, man. Oh, you know, I remember I played my homies, the flip that he did for Man's World. They were like, they lost it. You haven't heard that?
Yeah. Uh-uh.
You haven't heard that?
Yeah. I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure I have it. I'm going to play it for you.
Okay.
Yeah, he did that flip of Man's World, and it was just, oh, my God. It just, you know, I don't understand when, Kim, you were saying earlier that people have this. I mean, because I know some people that say this in terms of the cultish behavior of people who are Dilla stans, and I get it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I understand the idea that some people are saying, oh, you know, he probably wouldn't have wanted that released. But especially the thing that kind of I get tired of hearing is that he wouldn't have been as big if he were still alive. And to me, that's such a kind of ridiculous what if anyway. You know what I mean? There's lots of people that are still alive now that aren't as big as they could or should be. Like, De La necessarily isn't as good big as they should be. Like, I can't put on a De La song at a party and everybody knows it. It's within a certain crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But if all of De La were to pass away tomorrow, God forbid, if all that were to happen, everybody would be playing their stuff. You know what I'm saying? Their stuff will be going everywhere. And the fact is that he played, you know, he did stuff with Common, he did stuff with Busta Rhymes, he did stuff for all kinds of well-known artists. So now, and there were all kinds of people like Pete Rock, RZA, all kinds of artists that listened to him before. Right. There were people in the industry that knew who he was. You know, Quest was saying that he thinks that there are a lot of people in the industry that were producers who were afraid of him. Because he was just so tapped into things, and now you got people with ghost producers and all that other stuff, which to me I think is kind of whack. Yeah. But, you know, people that kind of take other people's stuff so that they can keep their lifeblood going.
Right.
You know, whereas Dilla was enough of a musician to be able to switch styles and know what he was doing, and a lot of people can't do that. So to me, to say that, oh, he wouldn't have been as big, like, so what? That has nothing to do with the quality of the work. You know what I mean? So
right. And I think the other issue, too, is when people think about Dilla's music, they think about, well, one, Slum Village comes to play. And mm-hmm. I'm not bagging on Slum Village at all. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed those.
Did you just say bagging?
I did say bagging. Yeah. I was going to say shitting, but I wanted to be nice. But now I've said shitting. So
oh, well, there we go.
I'm not at all trying to be down on them. And, mm-hmm. you know, R&P to the two brothers from Slum Village that we lost. Mm-hmm. But a lot of Dilla's music didn't necessarily have masterful MCs on it. Like, sometimes right. he did have some master MCs on there, like a Common. But not all the time. And I think what is hard for people to do is to separate the MC from the track sometimes. Like, when you hear a song as a yeah. package, you hear the package. And you don't, if you never take it away and never say, well, let me listen to an instrumental version of this, then you sometimes aren't able to separate the two.
And, you know, people didn't, his beats, he was never that guy to kind of like champion his own stuff. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, or if I got a Neptune's beat or whatever, I'm clearly have to say Neptune's did the beat. They probably gonna be in the video. Like you hear it or you listen to it, you're like, oh, I know it is because you told me it's a damn Neptune's track in case I didn't know. Dilla, you just like, oh, this is a Dilla beat. Like, oh, okay. This shit, and it's not like the good person's not on there like, yeah, you need to, this is Dilla. Don't you love it? They just doing a song. And then you just read the credits or you just find out that, and like, oh, he did this? Yancey.
Right. But the thing is that really this is kind of one of the situations where nobody's going to be happy. Because I'll admit there are a lot of MCs that were on Dilla's stuff that I would say were kind of subpar or whatever, that he made them sound better with the beat. But then, yeah, he had Common, he had Busta, he had De La and stuff like that. But at the same time, people are like, well, he didn't have Jay-Z. He didn't have Kanye. He didn't have somebody of superstar status on his beat to now validate and co-sign it. And that's, again, this part of hip-hop that's been pissing me off is that it needs somebody else's validation to therefore mark it as being good. When I heard Mass Appeal, Guru wasn't necessarily the biggest dude like in hip-hop. He was respected. But it was understood that it was dope.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm not really, you know, there's this, you know, yeah, I wish that fucking Jay would do something over a Dilla beat. You know, why not? There's become this political aspect of, well, if I go on to this side of the music, then therefore I'm only, pleasing a certain audience. I'm not reaching out to a wider spread fan base. But when the light came out, when Common the Light came out, I knew enough people that requested that. I know I could play that at a party and people will like it.
Right.
You know, that was actually one of the songs that made Common bigger.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, if you give something a chance and let other people decide on whether or not it's dope. So, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, that thing just gets tired.
Oh, and by the way, if you also need somebody else of star status to co-sign it, Got Till It's Gone by Janet Jackson.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I heard it and knew that it was a Dilla beat, and I was like, yeah, all right, cool. Here we go. Now Dilla's going to get his money. Mm-hmm. You know, The Far Side was on it. Like, all those songs, those were hit songs. So, to me, this idea of it's not commercial enough. He didn't have enough club beats or enough this or enough that. No, the real issue is that he didn't go through the political channel to get his stuff on heavy rotation all the time.
Yeah, right. And I think too, people often are not aware of how exhaustive the discography is. They only attribute him to Slum Village or a couple of other acts and don't realize how vast the production credits run. Like, he's been producing for a long time for a lot of people.
Because I'm looking at him now. You look at the songs that people would equate to having hits. Mm-hmm. You got Vibrant Thing, which was Killed to Death.
Huge.
You got Erykah Badu, Didn't You Know. Mm-hmm. People love that song.
That was huge.
Like I said, the Janet Jackson remix. Fools killed that song. I mean, it was like, this Janet Jackson song is the shit. And nobody was like,
I love that song.
Oh, it was a J Dilla beat. We got to go get J Dilla. If that was like a Timbaland beat, oh shit, I got to go get Timbaland on my next shit.
Exactly. You also don't forget that the Do For Love by Tupac, that was actually a Jack Dilla beat because he did a remix for The Far Side, and so then it got credited to somebody else when they used part of his beat for the Tupac song Won't Do For Love. And so they said that it was some other dude that produced it, but it was actually a Dilla beat.
It's just so much going on. Like, I'm looking at this discography. The freaking Bahamadia 114 off of her little EP. Oh, that whole EP is sick.
Yep.
But that song is the shit. I mean, pick a Busta Rhymes song, really. You know what I'm saying? Like,
He's got certifiable, like, hits that everybody knows. You know, but then he gets to, you know, another thing with him is the whole, a lot of people have said he's the best rhyming producer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's debatable.
The best rhyming producer?
There are people who, because there's a lot of people who feel like he's the best producer that could rhyme.
Yeah.
Oh, I have heard that
argument.
And
a lot of people who kind of go against this, well, let's take Dilla down a little bit, is because of that. They're like, well, everybody says he's the best rhyming producer. I didn't really think his stuff was all that. I'm like, that part is debatable. I separate kind of that. Like,
okay,
if you say,
I mean,
me too. And I mean, it's a short list of producers who actually rhyme and produce.
And rhyme well. Right.
Right. And, you know,
I mean, if you listen, look, I tell you what, if you listen to his cadences, if you listen to the Rough Draft EP, like, he's rhyming his ass off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's rhyming his, fuck the police, he's rhyming his ass off. Yeah. And that beat is hot.
He does. He has,
you know what I mean? Line. I mean, shoot, if he wanted to, he could have held it down himself. There was also an unreleased album that was supposed to come out, I think, on MCA. He was rhyming over other producer stuff.
Right.
Producers that he liked. And he was rhyming his ass off. There's some people who, okay, if it's not your taste, it's not your taste.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that he didn't do enough or he didn't do X, Y, or Z, I mean, there's stuff of his still coming out. You know, there's people who found, I don't know if you heard the story about how they found a storage space of his that had just beat tapes all in it. You know, just old beat tapes, just all on cassettes.
That's crazy.
You know, unreleased stuff that they didn't even know that he had. Like, you know, he made music. That's what he was sent here to do.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's that Detroit. I mentioned this in another conversation when we were talking about Dilla
on the break.
Detroit has a specific sound, and something about the music and the influence of that city makes the people coming out of that city, the producers coming out of that city, I mean, they are of another breed of producer.
Yep.
And even your local everyday dudes are ridiculous. Like I mentioned on the break, we got one in our camp, our friend Jason Williams. Like, he's bananas. Mm-hmm. He's like a descendant of Dilla, and the stuff that he hears and puts together is crazy. Moody Man. Yeah. Like, it's foolish. And that Detroit sound is very specific. It's very unique. They know their music.
They do.
And they know good music when they hear it, and they're able to take something that seems like there's really nothing there to be built up on and create something really great from it, you know. And I think Dilla was such a wonderful representation of what Detroit music is and what that city brings.
Yep.
Like, for me, people who bang on Dilla, it's kind of in the same pocket as folks who are like, well, Tupac wasn't that great. And I'm like, no, you kind of got to look at everything that the man did. You know what I'm saying? You can't base it off of the final product or the last album or one song. Or
there has been, and, you know, I think maybe every generation has had this conversation, but I think that right now we can actually really see the signs of it, of this very simplified mentality where people don't quite understand a certain level of creativity. To take Claire and just change the note to make it player, to hear what he derived Raise It Up from, to the fact that he could hear something that the average person would not and then completely transform it into something. The sample for Get This Money, the samples that he did, like even taking the dancing machine, the way that he chopped it up for Move, like ridiculous. You know, it's a certain understanding of how you can take something that exists and completely transform the entire scape of it, you know. And a lot of people don't seem to understand that that's not easy to do.
No.
You know, that's not easy
beats.
To do.
Try making beats.
Exactly.
Like, anybody who's ever had like any question about it, just try making a beat. And I don't mean like going on to GarageBand and pulling already put together pieces. Like, try finding a song that you like, sampling it, adding drums to it, and
right.
different instrumentation to the point where the song is no longer recognizable.
Right.
It is not an easy thing to do.
And then keep doing it and keep making every one of them as good as the one before it.
Or better.
Right, exactly. Keep doing that. And then try a different style.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you're really serious about the music, going within yourself to figure out what's the next way that I'm going to creatively express myself.
Right.
It's not that easy.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's no knock to any of the other producers that are quote unquote super producers and all that other stuff. But, you know, their job is to kind of brand themselves and their sound. I'll give, you know, extra large shout out to Pharrell, because there's been a lot of stuff that he's produced where I didn't realize that it was him. To go from, you know, when he's done grinding to anything else that he's done, like, you know, is a mark of that. But he was also a fan of Dilla's too. He was a fan of a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can't really see, you know, not to act like everything, that every beat he made was gold, but the gold ones are definitely beyond gold. It's worth a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Oh, yeah, he has enough in his catalog. I mean, if, like, it's just, that's every artist. I'm not going to like everything you do, but the stuff that you make that's great, his stuff is just really great.
Man.
I mean, he's even gotten credited with, I've heard some people say he created Neo Soul.
Yeah.
The sound of Neo Soul. I'm like.
More or less, pretty much.
Wow.
You know, around that, you know, when you look around that time, that coming out between that, the Soulquarian sound, Maxwell, and then Raphael Sadiq coming out on his own, D'Angelo coming that around that time, like that was, you know, that was kind of the stew of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I think of Neo Soul, I feel like this is a conversation too I had with Duplay when we interviewed him in 2011. Mm-hmm. Like, when you say Neo Soul, what you're really going back to is Badu. To me, she's kind of the mother of that whole movement.
Yep.
And he was behind a lot of her sound.
Yep.
You know, so it's like,
and you got people, the people that you love who are your favorite producers, he's usually their favorite producer.
Yep. Okay, so I know somebody the other day said top five Dilla tracks. Ugh. If we gonna try to round this up to some kind of semblance of Dilla jams by Dilla, What are we going to say? Like, five each, max. Five each. Let's try not to. I mean, we can rename if we have to, but.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Are we just each going to do one and then we just go around?
Yeah,
is
I guess.
Easier,
so
or
number
just,
five?
Well, I don't. No, it's going to be like, I don't have a one. I can name five.
Yeah, I can't rank them.
Yeah, I can't rank them.
Because there was stuff on a posthumous, like, discography thing of Dilla's. I remember playing for some of my homies. They were about to break their neck. They were like, "What the fuck is this?"
I mean,
this?
The one he did, the one he did that reality check with Black Thought.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that
one
where
that just come up and he just riding the beat. You like,
yeah.
And then the one that you played behind the last Brothers Layman, the way the song ended, that everybody. Touch this, ill of that, no.
Yep. He did that too. He sure did.
That song is great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, I can.
Okay, if I try to pick five,
can you name one? Let's start with one.
So that Platinum Pied Piper's, that short, that Shotgun.
Did he produce it or just rhyme over it?
I think he produced that
that's
one.
His,
I think
that's his beat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I'm like, how come this needs to be like 5 minutes and you give me like 30 seconds and that's
two
it?
2 minutes long.
Because you know I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm going to loop this
forever. Yes. Yeah. We're going to keep repeating it.
That one, and then the one off of the J Lib. I have to look at the J Lib. Mm-hmm.
Yo, raw shit off of there.
Oof.
Yes. The Heist. That might be almost... Raw Addict.
Yep.
Oh my God, Raw Addict.
Kim is ahead, man.
I am a Dilla stan.
You talk about the hardcore tracks. Like these aren't the smoothed out. This isn't the smoothed out.
Oh yes.
Them bangers.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that Raw Addict. Okay, so whatever that one with Frank and Dank on his on the Welcome to Detroit is my jam.
Okay,
shit.
I love me some Frank and Dank.
Let me name a couple before I forget because my mind is racing with a few.
Yeah, it's okay. Go ahead.
Rockbox. Have you heard Rockbox by QD? No.
Yeah.
Chris Moore.
Okay. That sounds really familiar.
Rockbox. And this is skipping over the obvious ones that we've already talked about. So I don't know. Right. I mean, Vibrant Thing. I remember I told my boy, I was like, because, you know, Les Ride, that was his jam. But I was like, you know Dilla did Vibrant Thing? He was like, what? He was like, he's the best. I don't care what anybody else says. Rockbox by QD, Verbal Clap. That one.
I know
that one just comes in so perfectly.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You guys are really... Why did I even say to do this? This is just not even...
We're just naming all shit. It's too damn difficult.
It's too many.
Who are we? Who Are We by Slum Village? Oh, man.
Oh, that you know what love is. That's Slum Village.
There have been so many... the Look of Love remixes that I can't even... Mm-hmm.
Oh, that Jealousy off of Slum Village. Yeah. Oh, that's yep. shit. Yep.
I love Something That Means Something, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I say more than five? I'm going to stop. Just take this away.
Okay.
Just take
this away from me.
Let me just look one more time. Get a Hold. I love Get a Hold.
Yeah. All right. Let me go through my few. I will say off top, The Two Won't Do off of The Shining. That just... And then he always seemed like he always give you like a few seconds of just some snare or whatever. And then all of a sudden the beat kick in, you like, all right.
Okay. Yeah.
Shake It Down off of Welcome to Detroit. Mm-hmm. Once Again on Beef Rhymes of Life, Charcoal Quest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know if that's top five though. Looking at that So Hardcore from Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
Did I already say Let the Dialer Circulate? Do we
mention that? Yes. That's Steve Spacek one. That song right there is magic.
I'm not even looking at this list I made. Oh, how can I forget Lightworks?
Yeah, I was just thinking Lightworks.
Oh, that fucking beat.
That damn album.
Working on it.
Yeah, working on it.
Yeah, I think I bought like 3 copies of the album. I was like, here, I'm going to give these out to my friends. Shit, you need this.
And to think that he was doing that at the end of his life, like on his deathbed, he's in the hospital with a machine making those beats happen.
I mean, that was very, that says a lot. And he's just like, came out, he had lupus, and it's like he was about 5-6 months away. Not well. He's just like, I'm still making music. You're like, this dude. This is what he loves to do. And you can tell in his music. Like, he loves making music and does it well.
Yeah. Yep. I was saying, shout out to the homie Tash Mosley, because when Dilla passed, his wake information was public. Mm. And Tash called me one night and was like, what's up? We going? And we rolled out to the wake. And they had his casket there, but they had his drum machine with him.
Mm.
And it was crazy, one, the amount of LA music heads that were in the space. Like, it was a revolving door of DJs, producers, just all coming in and, you know, talking to his mother and... just sitting around having conversations about him. And like, I don't know how many, I'm sure it was a gang of us that were just members of the public who loved him and were fans and, you know, didn't get a chance to meet him personally. But like, the fact that it was just a revolving door of people coming in to pay their respects, like, this man touched my life.
Yeah.
You know, his music touched my life.
All right, I got two more.
Okay.
I got the She Said remix.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Man.
When I found that remix, I'm like, they got a remix. Yeah. He did a remix. I'm like, what?
Yep.
Yes, I'm playing this for my lady. Shit, this is.
Yes.
This is probably one that's probably always my favorite. I got to find it. He did a remix. for Fortet, A Serious As Your Life Is.
No, it's a killer.
And that took me forever to find it because I was like, where is this beat at? Like,
killer.
Whose album is this on?
Killer.
With just that whole guitar, and then 3 seconds later, kick the beat in, and you like,
I'm gonna drop this last one for sure now. Y'all know he did a remix, or like Slum Village did some shit with Daft Punk.
I heard about it.
Yeah,
I seen it on this.
Because he sampled Thomas Bangalter from who's in Daft Punk. He sampled that for Raise It Up, and so in clearing the sample, they were like, okay, it's fine, but you guys just got to do a remix for us. And he was like, okay. Somebody just posted it kind of a little while ago, and I heard it, and I was like, yo. It's stupid, man. Look, this is the reason why I get so fucking mad at you know, just at hip hop right now in a large way, because it's like, God damn, y'all motherfuckers are just not creative.
Right.
You don't understand the level of paradigm shifting that happens when I heard Dilla Beats. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm talking about. Like, let's get in the lab, do something, figure something else out. Stop letting the technology, you know what I'm saying, control you.
Right.
You know, he had NPCs and all that stuff, but he changed the NPC up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Used it. And like what you said when you opened the conversation, Yohansei, to me is really, really telling. The fact that a Dilla beat, because to me, you recognize Dilla's sound if you're a Dilla fan, but his music was not all so similar that you knew right off the bat, this is a Dilla beat.
Mm-mm, no,
you know what I mean?
When he went into this phase of like the 80s sounds, like the 80s kind of 8-bit sounds almost, and then going into the jazz samples, then the way he would do those crazy chops, like he would just chop up beats to the point where it would sound almost off, but like a collage, like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I remember even Questlove said, like, is this is kind of against the rules usually, but no, it's not. It's hot.
Yeah. the fact that his music makes you say, what is this, lets you know how groundbreaking his type of production was. You know what I mean? Rarely nowadays do we hear something that's so different that it is, you know, paradigm shifting. You know what I mean? You kind of like, this is nice, or this is a new version of something else I heard, or this sounds fresh. You know, this takes me back to the conversation we did have with Tash about Kanye. You know what I mean? Like, you hear something that's ahead of the curve, but never so different that you're kind of like, like I'm almost irritated by the uniqueness of what this is.
Oh, do you know how many times I got so tired of this dude? I'm like, I'm so tired of you making these hot ass beats.
Right.
Cut it out.
Slow down.
Yeah.
I can't keep up.
But look, man, we gonna have to wrap this up because we could go on all day. Yes. There's gonna be all kinds of, you know, Dilla events. There's gonna be all kind of Dilla mix. I'm gonna tell you this. Because I don't know if I've heard all of them, but I will tell you this. If you find Thank You, JD, Part 2 by J-Rock, it is a masterpiece. Okay? That thing belongs in the Smithsonian. It is a masterpiece of a mix. Everything. Like, you put it on, you are not stopping it. You go in the gym with that on, you are not stopping whatever you're doing. Yo, shout-outs to J-Rock. Shout-outs to everybody from Detroit. You know what I mean? Detroit, I have to tell y'all, y'all one of the hardest-working cities there is.
Yes.
You know, any other last words, Dilla, anything?
I just got to say, man, you know, if you don't really know about him, which I don't know how, but if you haven't taken a chance to listen to him, go through his discography, pick out the stuff you like, and just give it a listen. That's all. You don't have to consider him the best hip-hop producer ever. You don't have to. I mean, to me, my two favorite producers that he's in the top three, you know, Premier and P-Rock, are like, this dude is up here for show. I'm like, well, that says all to me.
Right.
So, you know, just love it. And I mean, if you get tired of it, I mean, look, I get tired of seeing this bullshit that come on TV and radio all the time, and they still beat me over the head with it.
Right.
So beat me over the head with some good crap.
Why not?
Yeah. Right.
I just want to say, I think what Dilla has that puts him in that same category as a Premier or a Pete Rock is his music is timeless.
It is
timeless, and it you know, it may not be universal, it may not be everybody's taste, but it's absolutely timeless. And I believe that, you know, 20 years from now, we will still be having conversations about the impact this man had mm-hmm. on the music industry, hip hop specifically.
Yeah, he owns the month of February.
Oh yeah, February.
Trump,
Black
all
History
the
slash Dilemma.
Yep. And I'm gonna say something else real quick. Also, look, don't think that I can't tell you, some of y'all producers out there, when you trying to, you know, emulate the Dilla drums and the Dilla chops. Cut it out. Get your own style. Let him, you know, influence you. Let him be an inspiration. But get your own style, man. He did his own thing. Do your own thing. If you really want to be remembered and heralded like Dilla was, then you got to do your own thing. You can't keep copying off of somebody else thinking that people ain't gonna recognize it. You know what I'm saying? Real recognize real. So on that note, we are done. This is The Jam once again. You know, stay tuned. We gonna have more and more hot shit for you. All right, peace.
Oh shit, that's the jam. He'll be like, oh shit, that's the jam. He'll be like, oh shit, that's the jam. He'll be like, oh shit, that's the jam.